Welcome to the GTC podcast.
Quick intro, but then we'll sort of get into it anyway, mate.
All right, mate.
There you go. So I think we're recording. You should have a little notification.
It says recording in the bottom corner there, I think. Yeah.
That's close enough, mate. That's close enough. Proper professional outfit, this. Welcome to the podcast, listeners and Sunny. This is going to be one of the most, I want to say interesting, just because there's some topics on there that are, well, they're interesting for one, maybe a little bit controversial, some of it, when we get down to I don't want to get this wrong, Heroic Heart stuff and what they do. That can be quite controversial. Also, the whole sort of topic is sort of involves danger and shit like that anyway. So, first of all, welcome, Sunny, from Six Sight. How are you?
I'm good, mate. Thanks very much for having me. It's good to chat to you. It's been maybe 10 years, maybe even longer. I don't even know, to be honest.
It is ridiculous, isn't it? Yeah. So, for everyone rather confused, me and Sunny know each other from the Corps, from the Royal Marines. He was in the RMR, and he did a detachment for quite a while in the end, wasn't it? You just didn't leave. You're like, if you get sort of an STI and don't get it treated right, it just sort of clings on, doesn't it?
Yeah,
and you did that with 4-2. So, and then went on to did loads of other stuff that I'm not going to spoil, because we can get into that. But yeah, it's been a long time, mate. And it's only really recently when I've been active again on social media through GTC that I've, you know, I crossed paths with your, with Six Sight and sort of reached back out to you, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. I was actually listening to your podcast like over a year ago when I was in Canada, because it was called something else, wasn't it? I remember listening to some episodes a little while ago, and I've listened this week as well. I like it, mate. It's good. And yeah. You had a bit of a gap, didn't you?
Yeah, massive, mate. Massive. So it was the working title podcast, because I couldn't think of a snatchy title. So it was that. And then when I started GTC, it just took a massive back step. You know, it was just everything was time into GTC. Then I sort of managed to step it up again by bringing it under that umbrella and going, why don't I just call it that? Did a couple more episodes. And then again, it's been for about a year, it's been idle, but we're smashing them out every week now. Every Sunday evening, one comes out. So, I mean, this one won't come out for like 3 and a bit, 4 weeks, something like that. A lot of stuff already lined up. So, you know, getting on top of it now, professional, aren't I?
That's good. Yeah, you seem like a busy man. I was looking at your Instagram and that. You've got some accolades down there, different things, projects. That's it, though, isn't it? That's the core. Like, everyone is just like fingers in all different pies all over. Do you know what I mean? That's what you get from it, I think.
100%, mate. Yeah, there's so many lads out there that when they leave, they just go on to like random shit or different shit, but they don't. A lot of lads don't just do one thing. Like, you know, yourself. Well, even if you just look at your bio on like sort of TikTok or Instagram, it's like, I'm going to read it so I don't get it wrong. But, you know, you've got the ex-commander, you've got corp spy, which is like corporation spy, like industrial espionage type stuff. You've got the bodyguard stuff, and then the ambassador for the charity and stuff that you work with. So, you know, even just that right there is quite a lot of stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, I just tried to chase around everything that I was interested in as a kid, really. Bit of a jack of all trades, master of none. Do you know what I mean? I just like doing different stuff. You know what I mean? That's what life's about, really, isn't it?
I think that, again, just like, it really does. A lot of bootnecks, when they get into the Marines, they realise that, you know, when you grow up or even as an adult, you see a lot of people where that's their thing. You know, they play rugby or they've got a career or, you know, they just like boozing, like run a short row. You know, they've all got something. He never listens to the podcast anyway, so he ain't going to know.
Well, actually, he probably will listen to this one. He was over here with Aaron Obi as well a couple of weeks ago. Yeah, that was mental. As you can imagine, nothing's changed there.
But most people have that one thing. But I think bootnecks, what they do quite well is do a lot of different things at a decent level. And then if they can get really good at one thing and then do other things at a decent level, it really helps it out. So before we bore the listeners with just us like chatting and reminiscing and mentioning people that we both know, let's throw it to yourself, Sonny. Give us a quick sort of brief, a little rundown on who you are and Six Sight, who it is and what it is.
So I started Six Sight basically to teach some skills that I've learned throughout my life, not just in like the RMR and other stuff, but also just being a bit of a Jack the Lad. I got into a lot of trouble when I was younger. I've always been like interested in fighting, and had a lot of fights. So I had a lot of like altercations growing up. And also doing surveillance in a private sector, and I do close protection. So there's a lot of skills from that. I've picked loads of different things, and I'm trying to, well, I've built packages to teach like everyday person. Situational awareness is my main teaching point, you know, getting these preventative measures. So people that aren't inclined to actually go and train jiu-jitsu for a long time, or take Krav Maga classes for a long time, or do boxing, because a lot of people ain't actually going to take the time. You can say it all day long, but a lot of people out there ain't actually going to do it. Do you know what I mean? It's trying to give like some drills and tactics to lots of different people. I've got a women's course, and also I've got a family protector, which is aimed at like the dad, the father of the family, to use like different close protection drills and just build habits and situational awareness so you detect threats early on to be able to get out of there instead of having to scrap your way out. Obviously that's not a good thing to be doing if you've got kids, or and the state of the world today with knife crime and all the rest of it, terrorism, all that sort of stuff. So I'm looking at these problems and tackling them and giving training, and I was doing it a lot on my Instagram. I give out a lot of free training on my Instagram. I break down like real videos of real scenes, and also I do demonstrations on there as well. So
yeah, mate, yeah, you raised like a cracking point, because you know we're both people that are active. We've both done sort of martial arts based stuff growing up, and like we sort of took that through into the Marines. And I think a lot of guys that go into the forces, guys and girls that go into the forces, do have some sort of interest in scrapping of some kind. And you know, I would always say that it's good to learn something, even if it's just to keep yourself fit. But, you know, so, yeah, do jiu-jitsu. I like jiu-jitsu. I train jiu-jitsu. But as a fitness thing, yes, it gives me some tools, but it's mainly for the fitness and the mental side of it. And I think, as you say, a lot of people, if they don't do anything like that, you know, they might be into the gym, they might train two or three times a week and keep themselves fit, but some sort of combat based sport, you know, what is there for them to be able to be protect themselves and be situationally aware?
Yeah, that's it. You just need a go-to, really. Do you know what I mean? Like my go-to is to dip the head and throw the right hand, and I survived my whole childhood with that move. Do you know what I mean? But most people don't have a go-to. They don't have a plan in a lot of these situations. So I'm actually coming back to the UK in the next 4 weeks, and I'm jacking up some training for like the terrorism threat in London. You know, there's patterns there. Knives are being used, vehicle ramming attacks. You could do jiu-jitsu and be a black 10-dan black belt or whatever. You ain't ever going to stop a vehicle ramming attack. The way you counter that is by situational awareness. You need to detect it early, get you and your family off of the X. Because basically it's an ambush, isn't it? Do you know what I mean? And if you are coming up against a knife and you've never done any training, I'm giving little tips. Like, for instance, use a shield. If you're carrying a backpack, then you're going to use that to deflect the blade while you're making your way to an exit, create space. Or, for instance, use a barrier. If there's a parked car, if you can get on the other side of a car, or even a lamppost, do you know what I mean? A lot of people may not think of these things, but you don't actually need real training to do it, you know? Just highlighting the most obvious things that anybody could use to save their lives if they're caught in this worst case scenario.
Yeah, I think quite a lot of the time, you know, a lot of these things, like as you say, you know, like knives in the UK, for example, or cars in the UK, you know, if you're a law-abiding citizen, you're not walking around with a machete down your pants. Whereas, you know, someone going out to commit a terrorist act or a criminal act probably is, you know, or has some sort of large blade. So it's like, you know, you're very unlikely, if you come into that situation, to whip out, you know, your Bowie knife and start trying to like ram a knife fight them, you know. And even if you were, I saw a podcast once with a knife fighter, right? And he said the biggest thing that Hollywood gets wrong about knife fighting is that the winner never gets cut or only gets one or two cuts. Yeah. And he was like, complete lie. Everyone gets cuts to shreds because there's blades flying everywhere. You're going to get, whether it's on your hands, your arms, whatever, you're going to get cut to shreds. And it's like, if you're trying to scrap with someone with a knife, you're going to get both cut to shreds. So it's like, you know, you want to avoid that before you come to it. But it's also, you know, if you're abroad, you know, if you're in the US, their gun laws allow, you know, citizens or most states to carry. If you're there as a tourist, you know, they're possibly packing heat, as they say. And without that situation awareness, you're not, no matter how much training you have, how good you are at jiu-jitsu, how well you can punch someone in the face, if someone draws on you because of something that's happened, you're pretty fucked, aren't you? So having that situation awareness and skills that anybody can access at any time, I think it's a gap in the market, isn't it? It's not really something that's being targeted and pushed to the mainstream.
Yeah, that's exactly what it is. And speak to anyone from law enforcement, military, it's being aware of your surroundings is what is going to, first of all, it works in two parts. It's detecting that threat early, but also it's like these predators out there, they're always looking at you and they're evaluating you. Are you an easy target? Are you in my like profile sort of realm? So it works in two ways. If you can present a nice, confident, aware front in certain times of your life, you don't have to be paranoid all the time, but I call it switch on times as a little bit of training I developed. So like when you're walking home late at night, you're walking to the tube station, there's certain things and habits you can change so you're not like an easy target. Do you mean make yourself a hard target? But yeah, I've been in around North America quite a lot, and they're always too quick to talk about, yeah, I'll just shoot the guy, da da da. You ain't going to get a drop on someone unless you see them early on. Do you know what I mean? So this is complementary to firearms training. I've lived in Canada for 3 years, so I've been doing it up there as well. And it's been well received because a lot of situational awareness training, I've sat in a few lectures in my time, is very theory-based. Like, you step out the classroom, you're like, yeah, I know the mind processes, but what am I going to do now? Like, so I've built a situational awareness system, enhanced situational awareness system, where it gives actual practices, techniques, for instance, like positioning yourself when you're sitting in a restaurant and stuff like that, eating with your family. There's no reason why you shouldn't be sitting there facing outward to the door when you're with your family, because you can see everything that's going on. You don't have to be like on high alert, but if something does happen, if someone does walk in, you're automatically in a good position to see it and react to it. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I think it, like, obviously something that you do well is, as you said or alluded to earlier, it's on your Instagram and your TikTok and stuff, where you find some incidents that some of them are graphic, but most of them are censored in a good way, that they're watchable without graphic sort of thing. Otherwise you'd be banned from Instagram and not, you know, not racking up 15+K followers. So you're pretty clever with that. But what you do is you break it down and say, look, this is the situation. This is what happened. These are the good bits. And what I do like is it's not always the bad examples. A lot of accounts similar to yours, or a lot of training similar to yours, is always, all of their lessons are based on when things go wrong. You know, this person's done this and they're an idiot. This is what he should have done. Whereas some of yours, I remember one specifically, I can't see at the moment. I think it was a little while ago, with the lady who stopped the child being abducted. Just for being like heads up, and she was sort of like keeping alert, and there was a dodgy guy that you sort of point out, and then he tries to sort of walk towards to sort of do something with the girl, the young girl, and the woman sort of very passive, is sort of passive non-compliance, not aggressively, but gets the child out of that situation without escalating anything. And I think that's really good, because as you say, it gives practical examples that people can relate to and go, oh, okay, that's what those theory lessons or situational awareness are actually talking about.
Yeah, I agree. And part of my training, when I go into these courses and actually spend time, it's very hard to teach on a little like Instagram reel, do you know what I mean? It's just like a little bit of information. When I actually go into training, I'm trying to make it clear to adults that if there are children in environments, we have to look after them. Do you know what I mean? I know it's in us. We're like, in America, they're all about protectors. Do you know what I mean? But we are protectors.
Sheepdog.
Exactly. But any adult should be looking out for other children. I'm not just talking about terrorism and stuff like that. It's talking about children walking out in the street. Like, we should always have situational awareness and step it up a bit when you're in these busy environments and look out for others. So I do like a bit of community-based stuff as well. Do you know what I mean? Like, America's all about that, but England's about it as well.
Yeah, I think it's important in the modern day and age, you know, and it's hard to make these things relatable. And a lot of people, we have more sensory overload now than ever before in our lives. You know, everyone's been a victim of it. Headphones in, maybe even noise cancelling headphones, something on their phone, and you're just staring at the phone. Or even if you're navigating something, you look down at your phone to try and figure out where you're going. And obviously, a few years ago, it was big in London with the moped stealing the phones. You know, they would literally just wait for someone to be looking at their phone right up next to them, snatch it right off. But what happened was, now you rarely hear of that. And all it literally comes down to is people are now harder targets because they know in those areas that happens. So people don't stare at their phones all the time. And if they hear a moped, first thing they do is put their phone down or in their pocket and look up and look around. And, like, you know, it's a very good, easy example of saying, like, you don't have to do anything. You don't have to have, like, a shooter down your pants. You can just go, right, what is the threat? This is the threat. Let's make myself a hard target. And as bad as it sounds, you don't need to be the hardest target in the street. You just need to be harder than the person next to you. In terms of not harder as in hard as now, it's just harder, a harder target.
Yeah, that's exactly like a lot of the trainings. Like, you don't have to be the fiercest lion on the plane. You just don't have to be like the weakest gazelle, I always say, you know. Like, if there's two people down the street and one's got valuables on show, headphones in, looking down, and the other person's like standing tall, confident, walking, having a look about, then whoever that bad guy is studied, is well studied, actually, that they're obviously going for the unaware victim. But being unaware of your surroundings is like the number one thing that makes you a target for theft, especially pickpockets. And a lot of the time, like you said, you're not looking to scrap. That's the last thing we want to do. Just standing confidently, having eye contact with someone who is a pickpocket, that's it. The threat's gone. Like, they ain't ever coming after you once you've clocked them. Do you know what I mean? And once you start practicing these techniques and that, you actually see a lot of things going on in the world. Like, when I was working surveillance in London, I would spot drug dealers and pickpockets and thieves daily. And it was surprising how many were actually knocking about in, like, West London and things. Because you just see the behaviours, like the abnormal, you know, just dress and just the way they act. And most people don't actually absorb the world around them. That's a big, big thing, really. It's just being present in the environment. That's actually good for life in general, you know. Take a bit of a break from staring at the phone as you're walking along.
Yeah, it's one of those things where, you know, people that maybe have grown up in, like, not dangerous, but had some situations when they've grown up, gone into military-based things, you know, you naturally learn a lot of these things, but there's still a lot of people don't. You know, they might have a little bit more sheltered upbringing or just a different upbringing. And also, it's like, you know, the little thing, like you mentioned earlier about, you know, you could just use your bag as a bit of a shield, you know, not many people is that going to click to. So it's those little lessons, as you say, because I heard one criticism, not about your brand, but it was about self-defense of some kind, which is a little bit more applicable, but it was a online self-defense class. And the criticism was, is that how can you teach self-defense online? And it's sort of like, well, yeah, there is a point to that. But you're not trying to teach them to be hand-in-hand combat wizards, are you? You're able to do it online because of your systems that you've got in place.
Exactly that. I actually strongly believe you can't teach a person to fight from watching a YouTube video or an online course. So I don't try to do that. But my course, I do recommend highly different martial arts that will retain people. And that's why I recommend jiu-jitsu, because of the community around it, the effectiveness of it. But I try to send people into in-person training, because if you're coming up against someone trying to rob you on the street and you, well, first of all, most people should just comply because it's not worth getting stabbed these days. And that's in my training. It's honesty, really. A lot of these American things are, yeah, you need to do this, do that. It's like, it's not worth it, mate. Just give over your goods, live another day, report, document it, try and get them off the street in that way. Do you know what I mean? There's only certain times when you should actually be fighting. And to be a good fighter, you have to train and you have to do some sort of sparring real life scenario. So yeah, the stuff I'm teaching is actually, it's actually like not, it, well, it's taught. You can teach it over video. You can teach it in person. And as long as you go away and practice it in your own time, then it is very beneficial.
Yeah, I think it's one of those, isn't it? I think most people would agree that even a topic that can be taught online is always easier to teach in person, and it's always better sort of to respond, because then you've got the back and forth, haven't you, a lot easier than online. You've got that interface, you know. Podcasts is, are always better in person, you know, face to face. But, you know, you're in Costa Rica because, you know, apparently that's what you do now. and I'm in England. So it's like, you know, we'd have to wait a few more months to get that in the books. And then, let's be honest, we'll probably just be on the wets when you come down. So it would be a lot harder. So, yeah, mate, awesome. So I think that gives people a little sort of idea and intro into what Six Sight actually does. Obviously, we'll put out all your socials and stuff afterwards so people can get a little bit more specific into it. What's the focus moving forward from a Six Sight point of view? You know, what's the upcoming push? What's the upcoming courses? What's like the next on the cards? We spoke about the situation awareness, and that's obviously all that always the standpoint. But what's the next new thing, or the next the focus for you guys?
Well, it's basically, like you said, in-person training, seminars, and also corporate training, like giving people some drills who are commuting in London, because they say, oh, it's really rare to get caught in a terrorism threat. Like, I lived in London, I was within 3 terrorist attacks, about 3 miles of them, whilst living there, because they're 2 in the same place, on the London Bridge there, near Borough, and then another one at Westminster. Do you know what I mean? So people are commuting through there, and there's just little habits, and if something was to happen. So I want to do corporate training. I'm setting up to do it, and then I'm going to be going around the UK doing in-person seminars to different groups of people, basically, because that is the beneficial way. And COVID put that on hold, to be honest. That was always the goal, but when COVID happened, obviously there's no events or anything, so then I had to rethink it all for a little bit. But yeah, coming back to the UK, that's what I'll be doing.
Pauses it all a bit, doesn't it? And like, obviously a lot of your stuff is on Instagram, and you've been putting a lot on TikTok as well, so a lot of it's actually available for free. But what do you think, you know, social media as a business tool and a personal tool, how do you feel about it, and how is it helping you? Is it something you wish you didn't have to deal with? What would you say?
I have to be honest here, I wish I didn't have to deal with it. It's like, especially for me, I'm watching violent videos constantly every day and then critiquing them. And also, it's like a bloody Tamagotchi. Do you know what I mean? You have to constantly attend it all the time. And I have a very good follower, like strong followers, and I always chat to people. So if anyone ever has any questions, just send me messages and I just give my advice and help people out. But it is very time consuming, you know what I mean? So I like to do it, but it is a bit too much at times. And also, speaking in front of a camera is not, I have to do it to teach, do you know what I mean? But it's not natural for me. It's hard every time. Do you know what I mean? I'll step in a ring and have a fight any day of the week, but stand in front of a camera, it's just like, you know what I mean? It's not really natural, I'd say.
It doesn't flow as well. It's sort of one of those, I'm starting to ask the guests and stuff for the podcast about social media. I feel like there's a big move at the moment, especially amongst sort of veteran people, away from social media as a whole. And like, there's so many that just don't have it anymore, or they've got it but barely go on it, you know, and that's really good for a lot of things. But I just want to keep getting a balance of an opinion, because I think there is lots of good things about social media, and we need to sort of keep focusing on them, but make sure we use it in the right way. It's essentially a social tool. It's not a life. So yeah, I just like to ask people's opinion and see, you know, what they think of it. So that makes sense. You mentioned sort of stepping in the ring. So you've got a fight planned, haven't you? You've got bare knuckle boxing planned. Let's have a little quick chat about that. And then the reason that you're doing it is going to take up a lot of time. So bare knuckle boxing then, it's for charity, is it? To raise money?
Yeah, well, it's BKB, so it's a big promotion in London. It's actually at the O2 in the little Indigo Club there. But it's actually got quite a lot of traction in America. Mm-hmm. The BKFC is like big events, and these ones are big events, televised all around the world. So I've always had a dream of being a professional fighter. I've always wanted some professional fights. Like I boxed in the core a little bit, and I boxed before that. And then I went down the MMA route. I had 3 MMA fights in America from Canada. Just kept getting injured, and then COVID hit. So this is like I'm 34 now. It's like my last little have a go. Do you know what I mean? It's, you know, it's like English heritage. I grew up scrapping all the time, and I like the like out there factor of it. It's a bit like, it's a bit gruesome, but it is in our heritage. Do you know what I mean? And I think there's some honor. Well, there's a lot of honor in having a straightener. I think that's what we're missing in our society for young men. Yeah. A little bit. There's too much knife crime. People ain't. Like back in my day, everyone always says that, but I did have a lot of scraps. I got filled in most of the time, but the next day I had a black eye, and then, you know what I mean? You just carry on. That's it. It ain't like that in London, especially now, or all over the world. But I just like it, mate. I like the scrap. I like the, it's more of an entertainer sort of thing as well. I just want to get in there, just give it all I've got.
Put on a bit of a show.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. Yeah.
So why did you pick like going to bare knuckle boxing rather than, say, trying to get on a professional like MMA card? You know, because there's loads of good local franchises and stuff and things like that in and around the UK that are doing really well now. You know, why bare knuckle boxing? What was the
personally
what was the process?
Time is ticking for me, and I've been learning. MMA, so I had to start jiu-jitsu from scratch, wrestling from scratch, Muay Thai from scratch. I have a boxing background, boxed since I was like 15. I won the core champs in 2015, and then I've always gone in and out of it. So the learning curve for MMA, although I love it, I like watching it, I like training, it's a steep learning curve to get to a professional level. With bare knuckle boxing, it's like in its heyday, it's like just tipping over on the cusp at the moment, and people like me can get in there and get a lot of notoriety, a lot of views, a lot of people, like a great atmosphere inside that. I watch those fights, and it's like, it's actually all the old like East End gangsters sort of thing, you know, like those types are in the crowd, but everyone's having a massive piss up, and it just looks a lot of fun, to be honest. And there's also opportunities for British title, like you could have 3 fights and British title. He's fighting for a British title next week. They're calling him the Cockroach.
Baker,
the bootneck that you put me onto. I actually watched his fight, so I didn't recognise him, but I recognise him now that you've said about it. So yeah, he's fighting for a British title next week on that same show.
Yeah, I can't find his Instagram at the moment. I was going to give him a shout out, but yeah, he's if you type in. I'm going to Google it now. The cock on Google. Let's see what comes up. So this guy is a bare knuckle boxer that he was
Ryan
at 42.
Barrett.
Ryan Barrett. That's it, not Baker. Barrett. The same time that we were there, he was in 5 Troop K Company and we were in 4 Troop. He's actually sponsored by Klakoff Clothing, who's owned by, I'm not going to say his name because he's still serving, but another bloke in 5 Troop. But yeah, I remember him being a really good dude. He's had some health issues and stuff like that. And I think that's part of the cockroach thing, is you just can't kill him. He just keeps coming back. But yeah, he's had a couple of fights, isn't he? Because he boxed as well, and he's had a couple of fights, and now he's fighting for a British title, which is pretty mental. Okay, cool. So that's the route you went down, and you sort of want to get that pro fight. And do you reckon you'll try and stick with that, try and get a few more fights in, or is this like a one-time deal? What's your plan with it?
I want to go for as long as I can go on it, to be honest. See how far I can get. There's a route to a British title in like three or four fights. That's how like new it is. And like if you put on a show, if you sell tickets, that's what it is. You're an entertainer at the end of the day. And I think I got that. Of my fighting days, I always at like a scrap, do you know what I mean? Put on a show and got a bit of power behind these hands, blessed with it, which is always a bonus. And I don't mind taking a punch. My mates will fucking talk about that. Sometimes when we was at RMR London, I was working a security job, and one day after a piss up, after being ashore, I didn't want to go into work. So I was like, lads, I need you to fill me in and say I got mugged. I can't be bothered to go to work. So that I got the lads to fill me in, basically. And then I had a day off of work. Actually, he said, oh, can you just come in at midday? So I got like 3 hours off work, and I ended up going to work at 12, fucking like black and blue. But yeah, Jesus don't mind Christ. Taking a bit of a beating. And I like it. It's adrenaline, you know. It's the biggest test, standing against another man's equal weight. And bare knuckle is literally the rawest form of fighting, I believe.
Yeah, I think, you know, it was MMA for a long time. You know, it was sort of like, and it still is in a way, but, you know, MMA is a weird one in the sense of like, it's still a sport because everyone knows you have to have a certain level to do that. As you say, you know, it's a bunch of specialists of different things. If you're really good at jiu-jitsu nowadays in MMA, you're still not going to do very well. You have to be good at everything. And that's not necessarily a bad thing, but what I mean is that makes it more of a sport because it's more competitive in that sense. Whereas I think bare knuckle boxing, it's still very raw, still very, you know, it's one thing. You know, and boxing's brilliant for that sense that it's one thing. You know, you're the best at that one thing. And then, you know, you take those gloves off and, you know, it's a big difference because, you know, no padding, you can knock people out relatively easier. But then also, you know, a little jab is going to hurt. You know, you hope the adrenaline takes care of most of it. But, you know, a little pop to the nose and you're very aware of it because your eyes fill with sort of like, well up with little bits of tears essentially, and you're sort of trying to see through the tears. You're like you're sort of aware of it, it doesn't hurt that much, but your eyes are like streaming and then your nose is streaming and you're still trying to scrap through it. You're like, I can't see anything. So it's like, you know, when you haven't got those gloves on, it makes a big difference. I think
definitely separates the men from the boys, I think that's for sure.
Yeah. And they say it being an up and coming thing is quite cool to be a part of, so we'll be make sure to sort of pay attention. Did you reach out to Ryan during the end? Did you chat to him?
Yeah, I put some of his stuff on my Instagram message like once or twice. Yeah, he probably, well, I don't know who I am, to be honest. I'm the grey man. But yeah, I'll try and promote anyone like that is a bootneck or trying to get up. Do you know what I mean? We'll help each other out. That's the way it is.
Yeah, that's it, mate. That's it. You know, and I think bootnecks quite good at that. They help each other out until you, you know, and they tend to trust each other as well. And I'm just thinking of a situation recently where someone pretended they were a bootneck, turns out they weren't, and it was like people were supporting them straight away. It's like, yeah, sweet. And then it's like, well, actually these things don't add up. And then it's like, yeah, I'm not. And it's like, well, why? But anyway, awesome, mate. So there's the other topic that I want to chat to you about, which I think might take a little bit of a time, and obviously we're knocking on, we've been here half an hour, and you know, I get talking and we could be here all night. I should have a podcast or something. But you are an ambassador for a charity, Heroic Hearts UK. Do you want to give us a little rundown about that, please?
Yeah, it's something I'm very passionate about. It's also in the same realm of helping the lads out. That's, you know what I mean? I've been brought onto this topic, which during COVID I was locked away for a while, and I've just started reading and researching about mainly psilocybin, which is a psychedelic active ingredient in magic mushrooms. So what Heroic Hearts does, there's an American one, which I'm an ambassador for as well, and they started a while ago. The UK one's a couple of years old, and they just had their first retreat, which is they take veterans suffering with PTSD and depression, any other sort of mental health issues, as long as they've been vetted and they've been through the NHS route, and there's no really they're not really getting much help. They take them to Peru and to ayahuasca retreats, and they go through that, and then they have integration coaching afterwards, which is actually by another bootneck who is working in the NHS, who's doing it in his spare time. And they just did their first retreat. I think it was like seven blokes went out there. I actually helped one guy get on there because he was messaging me. I have another Instagram called Do the Recon, and that is about this psychedelic. It's like studies and information about psychedelic assisted therapies. And he was messaging me on there. But I really believe in it. And I haven't done ayahuasca myself, but I do have experience with psilocybin, and it's helped me greatly, especially over the past 2 years of like COVID, fucking mental health issues, do you know what I mean? It's helped friends of mine. But the ayahuasca thing, I've been speaking to a lot of lads that are literally at their wit's end, and then they've gone for it, and then it's changed their life, do you know what I mean? And I actually speak into these people, and I really, really believe in it.
So from like my point of view, I'm like mega sort of naive, if you like, to most of this stuff, you know. Grew up with weed being a thing here and there. No one could afford coke anyway. But, you know, I've never really been in around drugs at all. And obviously you chat to people and things, and you hear things, and you sort of get the gist of what a lot of this stuff is. But like when you say was ashwagandha, what is it?
Ayahuasca.
I'll let you say that one again. What actually is that? Is that like shrooms based stuff as well? Is it like a what is that?
So that is, it's actually the active component, the psychoactive component is DMT, which if you ever listen to Joe Rogan, he always goes on about this. It is probably the most psychoactive drug, but it's held in human tradition in the Amazon for thousands of years, and there's tribes that have carried it on even through all of the technology that's happening. And actually that's where people are going, and that's where you should go, because they've got the traditions that have been carried on for generations. So there's actually two plants that are mixed together in a certain way deep in the Amazon, and then they give this psychoactive effects where it's apparently mental, but it's not an easy thing to do, do you know what I mean? People that do it, they end up fucking grand slamming a lot of the time, shitting themselves and pissing themselves and throwing up all in the same session, and it's lasted like 8 hours, and you're in the middle of the jungle, humid, mozzies, all this other stuff. So it's a daunting thing for people to go through. So it's not like a jolly, do you know what I mean? On the other hand, like mushrooms, people do take them recreationally, and I am actually not against that, because I've done it in nature and I've had some real good benefits of, like, I think it's made me a better father to my daughter and a better family man. It's reset me to make me realize what's important in life, to live for the moment. That's a recurring thing that comes from the mushroom sort of thing. But the ayahuasca is a stronger medicine, and it is a more effective, I think, for PTSD, especially when lads have gone through other routes, or just not going through other routes, because you have to talk to people to go through other routes, you know what I mean? I like to talk about it as an off-ramp, and it's an option. It's obviously not for everyone, but it's very well studied nowadays, and I think it's definitely coming into the main, into the UK. I know Boris is actually looking at psilocybin at the moment, and Canada has legalized it in aspects, and so is certain states in America, because we have a big mental health issues problem all over the world right now. I think it's going to be very beneficial. So yeah, I'm very involved in, I'll just like to talk about it. If anyone has questions, I have my Instagrams, I always talk about it and just raise the conversation, because it's been taboo for so long. And it just takes one bloke in a pub, if it's raised, to say, oh no, I believe in that, I know someone so and so that went through it, had great results, and do you know what I mean, changes people's perspectives, can save lives.
Yeah, definitely. The thing that sort of interests me about, from the tiny bit of research that I've done, and obviously listening to you now, and essentially like you say, listening to Joe Rogan, he's done it quite a lot, the thing that interests me about it is that whole, it's apparently really beneficial for people with PTSD or complex PTSD, you know, health, mental health related issues from trauma. And obviously that's a big like topic for people in the services, former services and stuff like that, because so many men and women take their own lives every single day. So it's like, it's such a big issue. But one of the big things that people say when it comes to those sort of issues, the first thing that everyone always says is talk to someone about it. Now, I'm not saying that that's the wrong thing to do. I'm saying, yeah, 100% talk to someone about it. What's the number one thing that most lads traditionally don't want to do when they're going through something?
Talk about it.
Exactly. And it's like, that's been the only option for a long time. Like, we've known it's an issue for a long time. And the only option that we've had for a long time, there's different therapies that have been built around it, but they're all around speaking to someone to release those different therapies, with loads of different abbreviations that there's no point trying to go through. And they've all had different values of success and things like that, but they all are based around speaking to other people. If that's not a way you operate and that's not what you like to do, well, then what is your option? You know, and I think it seems to be one of those things which is a viable another option. I think more research may need to be done, because I don't think everyone needs to go on those full-on retreats to get the benefits.
No.
Someone might be able to, as you say, like, you know, microdose some mushrooms or something, and then be able to realize what you've realized about, you know, your family and being a father and realizing fixing things. So the limited things I know about it isn't like a wham bam, right, okay, you've got this, nothing else working, right, off to the jungle you go, is it?
No. And I've spoken to a lot of people. I've spoken to people who are still serving, done a couple of tours, and they've really helped themselves with mushrooms. So the Heroic Hearts is doing it really professionally. They're doing vetting everyone. They're taking lads over there. They're paying for their treatments, organising it, and then integration coaching. But even that is going through a process. I actually personally believe that psilocybin mushrooms can be used by lads on their own. And I know a lot of people that have come to me and spoke to me have gone alone and done it. So I'm in the process of writing guides and stuff. There are guides out there already. Because if you are alone, like, and you're probably not, like you're saying, not going to speak to anyone, why not have a go of it? Do you know what I mean? And we're not talking about weak individuals. We're talking about fucking bootnecks and soldiers, like, jumping out of planes, fucking going to war. Like, why are they denied? Why can't they make a choice to do, like, do this medicine, which is actually quite well studied? Do you know what I mean? And it's non-addictive. It's definitely not to be taken lightly, that's for sure. But you can learn about it. And that Heroic Hearts is actually jacking up. They're in the process of jacking up a psilocybin retreat in the UK. So part of the reason why I came to Costa Rica, because I've been recceing different ayahuasca retreats. It's pretty much open here, and psilocybin retreats, just to put people in touch. But what I've found is it's hard. Lads aren't really willing to fly all the way over and spend, like, it is expensive, like $4,000 for an ayahuasca retreat. Do you know what I mean? And you've got to fly all the way over here with the flights and everything. So we need it to change at home. We need the psilocybin, I think, particularly to be legally put into, like, medical use, which is in the process actually right now. Hopefully it goes through, because it will help a lot of people. But yeah, a lot of people I know, they go out into nature on their own, and they just, or you have a sitter. So you have another lad that sits outside of your room and makes sure that everything is fine. And if you need any guidance or anything, they help you out and they're sober. That's the real way to do it. Yeah,
it's difficult, because obviously Heroic Hearts Project do it bang on 100% right. They have the science to it. They do it in a safe, controlled environment. So that's different. That's not what I'm going to ask here. What I'm sort of going to ask is, like, I pretty much think I know the answer. Like, how do you feel about not necessarily, we're going to lean towards more recreational now, and then I'll get to the point of the question. Recreational use of marijuana, I'm guessing you're pretty chilled about it. You're like, yeah, crack on, cannabis.
I lived in Canada. It's literally dispensaries almost everywhere. Legal.
Yeah.
Yeah, to be honest, I will talk about it, because for me, I was a very aggressive young man, and alcohol made that 10 times worse, you know. And when I do smoke weed, I just sit and play video games, you know what I mean? Just watch TV, watch Netflix, it's Cheetos. A different thing. Yeah, and there's no real bad health things from cannabis, you know. You can talk about mental health, but I would talk about the bad results of alcohol, which are physical and mental and, like, family problems and stuff. So yeah, I am an advocate for marijuana, but not as, like, not really pushing it that hard.
No, you know what I mean? No. More the the one beginning with S, with the Shoops. And then I just say, yeah, mate, I'm not even going to.
Actually, begins with a P, mate. It's
probably does. Actually, yeah.
It does. Yeah, wow. I can't fucking spell it, to be honest. It's hard.
But it's got silent P at the front, mate. Just silent P. But, and obviously shrooms, you've already said, like mushrooms, you're sort of okay with that. So I'm in the camp of like what people do right now, I'm not bothered. Like if you want to go and do that, crack on. Like I don't even really booze that much anymore. So it's like, for me, I'm like, look, if you want to go smoke weed, crack on. If you want to do mushrooms, crack on. If you want to like do acid or whatever, like dissolve some stuff, mate, crack, do what you want. Like if it's not affecting me and you're not harming other people, mate, it's your own body, enjoy it. Do, like, if you want to do that, crack on. So that's my opinion on it. My biggest thing is that I will not, like, smoke weed or take weed or possibly mushrooms in the UK, because anyone you get it from, it will be linked to, like, major crimes, you know, organized major crimes. And unfortunately, there's no such thing as a good drug dealer, because he's got it from someone who's got it from someone who's got it from someone. And someone along that train doesn't just deal drugs. You know, they're also exploiting people. They also might be into people trafficking or sex trafficking. They might be doing modern slavery. They might be, you know, even if it's just aggression and abuse and all of the things that run along those lines, or grooming young kids to run for them and stuff like that, shot for them. Like, you know, that's why I'd be, unless it's legalized, which I kind of want it to happen in the UK anyway, because I think it'll be, you know, I'd probably be more likely to get high on an evening than I would be, you know, drink a beer and induce all those calories while I'm trying to train and lose post-operation weight. No calories in a blunt, is there? But that's how I see it. Like, I would probably smoke weed, like, but not all the time, but like I'll do that probably more than I drink, but I don't, because there's no safe legal place to get it that, you know, isn't causing a shitload of drama in people's lives before it comes to you. How do you feel about that? Like, in terms of, you're saying about obviously for mushrooms, for people to try and help these issues, then that's a bit different because you're doing it for a purpose. But like, where do you stand on stuff like that, especially from the UK's sort of point of view?
Yeah, because being in Canada is a completely different world, you know. Like, you go into a dispensary and there's like gummies. It's not just gummies, like any sort of food you can think of. I was drinking weed beers. I actually didn't drink alcohol for 4 years. I just started drinking again recently. But I used to go to
Was that when Josh and Obi came over?
Yeah. I, you know what I mean? Live for the moment. You got to go for it sometimes, didn't you? So I drink weed beers, like low THC beers, and it was enjoyable and it was good. But you know it's regulated, you know it's safe. I do understand that the drug dealers in the UK, they are cutting stuff. There's chemicals all over it, and then there's all these other things down the line that are backdoor stuff that aren't really visible to us, but you know it's going on. I think legalization would be a good thing, particularly if it was just, first of all, for like medical, you get a medical card like you used to do in America and many states. Also with the psilocybin, the mushrooms, is actually, when you get into that realm, that's part of why I'm into it as well, is because it's so full of bloody hippies. Do you know what I mean? That's all these like types that are washing their crystals in a waterfall at a full moon, and that is what attracts them. But actually, they're the sort of people that are actually growing it, and you can grow it in your own house, in that you buy these kits online and stuff like that, which I wouldn't suggest anyone doing this sort of stuff. But in Canada, there's free dispensaries for psilocybin now, which are untouched by the police, but it's not fully legal, and so there is a different mindset. And I think for the police and stuff, it's going to be really beneficial, because first responders are going through trauma daily. They're like always on ops, do you know what I mean? So I think it will be better if it's regulated. But also, from a personal perspective, as soon as it's regulated, major corporations are going to take over and they're just going to fucking
suck the blood.
They're going to synthesize it as well, which there is companies in Canada right now that are making chemical psilocybin, which takes away part of doing it and part of what you get from it. What I got from it is very like, brings you back to nature, brings you back to your roots, and makes you more, not environmentally conscious, but humankind conscious. Like, it breaks down barriers of hate. It helps you like relate to what's important in life. But I got a very strong message of being like, I don't want to say it, but I'm going to say it, at one with nature.
Oh, shit.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And part of that is actually because the mushrooms, they grow in the cow fields in England all over. I don't advise picking them. That's something that I really strongly don't advise because there's so many bad ones that look like the real ones. Do you know what I mean? Yeah, but actually eating the mushrooms, I think there's a gap there for certain communities to grow and harvest it instead of it fucking just being sold in packets, do you know what I mean, pharmacies, which I think will probably happen, but it, the natural mushroom is more respected in this sort of world to eat the actual natural mushroom because it comes from tradition in Central America. That's why I'm here as well. Like in Costa Rica, they used to have witch doctors and shamans which would treat like the Mayans and the Aztec warriors. And in Mexico, that's where they held a lot of the traditions. So there's like remnants of that still carrying on. I think we should try and keep that and not just go completely off onto the medical side of things. But I think a bit of both will probably happen. It's depend personal preference what sort of a person would do if they chose to do it. One of the main applications that I want to say is has been well studied is end of life anxiety. Imagine being able to give your grandma or your granddad, who is terminally ill and really fearful of dying, a one session thing, one time, where at the end of that session they're actually at peace and not worried about passing over to the other side and are living a bit more happily in their last days. And that's well studied and well documented that that is a very good application for psilocybin. And having being able to offer that gift is it's like nothing else, do you know what I mean?
Yeah, that's sort of something that would be, you can't put a price on something like that. So when with I'm going to go for it, psilocybin. Yeah.
That's
with
it.
That is that like, or does it depend on the person? So is that like a single time thing, like with the other even longer word that's a bit more of a retreat, like can take a few days, multiple treatments, mixing trees together, you might shit, puke and like, you know, whatever else yourself at the same time. That's more, I would imagine, more of like you do that and then you sort of like you work on other bits, but you sort of that's you do that once. Is the psilocybin, is that the same sort of thing, like a one-time trick pony, or is it like a continual thing, or does it just depend on what it's being used for?
I'd say it's usually a one-time thing or two sessions, and the way the session would work, if you was doing it medically, which is being done, but if you're going to do it on your own, then you have a sitter, a trusted person who wouldn't interact with you really, just be there just in case, and then you'd go into your bedroom, a safe place, setting is very important, and you take like a low dose and you have an eye shade and you listen to an actual podcast, a playlist, which is just music that takes you through a journey, and it's very internal, so you just lie there in darkness internally in your head and you just go on a journey and you just go with it, you just take it wherever it goes and you confront some issues or you come out and you have a lot of revelations, and afterwards you just write down everything. And in the professional way that it should be done, then you'd have integration therapy afterwards where you'd talk with someone highly experienced, maybe like even a psychiatrist, that therapist, and then you'd work on things afterwards. But it is a one session thing. It's been very successful for addiction as well, like for quitting smoking is a very good application of it. There was one study where they had participants after one session, 3 months down the line, 80% of those participants have still not had a cigarette, and 3 months down the line is quite a big deal. And I think the normal other strategies is like, I don't know, 11 or 13% of people are still not smoking 3 months down the line. So yeah, I'm talking out like this be all and end all magic pill, but I actually think that it's really, really going to help humanity. And there's also questions as to why it's not already available to humanity, which is another conversation.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things, isn't it? Especially as you say, the thing that I like, it's mega new to me and I'm, you know, not well versed in it, but the thing that I, that makes me more comfortable talking about it and hearing about it is the fact that it takes out a lot of the process. You know, with most other commercially available drugs in all those countries that we spoke about, or even illegally available drugs, you know, anything that goes through a big pharmaceutical company has been fucked with millions of times. Even when you think about things like cocaine and things like that, fucked with millions of times before it gets to what you're able to actually induce. Same with opioids, you know, but all of these things come from natural sources at one point, you know, bar some of like the chemical LSD acid type stuff. Some of that is literally almost all out of a lab, but most of it, you know, coca leaves, cannabis plants, you know, poppies, it all comes from those sort of sources, and same as mushrooms. But all of those other ones are then, there's a lot more of a process to. It seems like with mushrooms, to get the psilocybin,
close enough, that's it.
I'll take it. begins with a silent P, don't you know? To get that, it's sort of, it's pick them, I guess you might dry them or treat them somehow, and then induce them. You know, there's not much more of a process in my very basic understanding. So I guess for a lot of people, that might help to bridge that gap a little bit.
Yeah, it is. And it also, it's a one-time thing and they're non-addictive as well. Mm. And if people really want to learn about them, you start to learn that they have been used by humans for long time. And there's even Siberia, all across the Central and South Americas, North America, you know, all through Europe. There's a lot of documented stuff about them. And also they were studying them in the 60s, just before the war on drugs.
They were studying everything in the 60s.
Yeah. And then in the 2000s... Oh, sorry, go on.
No, go on. Finish up, mate.
And then in the 2000s, they began being allowed to study them again. So we've still got 22 years now of recent
more
studies.
Up-to-date research.
Yeah. Sorry, what were you going to say?
Did you ever watch that video, old black and white footage of the bootnecks that were given LSD?
Yeah.
How sick is that?
Climbing trees at that.
Yeah. Hanging out of trees saying I'm a monkey. You'll probably be able to Google it. If you haven't seen it, guys, try and Google like Royal Marines LSD experiment or something. It's pretty fantastic. But it also just shows like, well, this is work to make super soldiers, is it? They're just hanging out of trees by their legs and stuff.
Yeah. Amazing. Look like they're having a good day, to be honest.
Yeah, it looks quite good. Like that makes me go, oh, all right, maybe I'll give it a crack. So lastly, mate, we're knocking on for time now, and most people's attention spans are lucky to hit an hour of listening to my horrible Essex tones. So last thing I want to sort of like touch on is a bit more personally with yourself. You've got a bit of history that people can sort of dive into, but it's more about what you're doing now. You know, you float around quite a lot. And you were in Canada for a few years, so obviously London for a few years, Canada for a few years, Costa Rica for a few years now. How
and
does
Australia.
That all, and Australia, yeah. You know, how does all of that sort of play out? Like, how do you live in these places? How do you decide where you're going to go? Obviously, you've got a missus and a kid. How does all that sort of work? That's a massive question. Try and be relatively brief with it. Go.
To be honest, it's actually been quite hard for us to stay in the same country visa-wise, even though my missus is Australian, and I had to leave the UK to go to Australia because her visa messed up in the UK, and then I could only get a one-year visa. And then we looked for a country that would have us, and then Canada was that country, and then we moved to Costa Rica to pursue this sort of stuff. But I've taken it on the chin. It has been hard, you know. Like, we don't live a conventional life. We don't have a home, like a base. But we do have a lot of good experiences. I've learned a lot about different cultures. I've learned a lot about the American culture and Canadian culture, which has influenced a bit of my training. They're very much into all this, like, defend yourself, protect yourself. Do you know what I mean? So I've taken that and kind of, now I'm coming back to the UK.
Britishized it.
Yeah. Now I'm coming back to the UK. I'm trying to like apply everything that I learned around the world to the UK's problems. Really, and I'm looking forward to coming back, seeing family, seeing friends. I haven't actually spoken. It's good to hear your accent, to be honest, because
most people don't say that.
Yeah, I've just been away from everything for a while, and I actually feel like I'm speaking in English, but now, like, when I speak with my wife and everyone else, I'm probably saying, like, gas station and stuff like that. I fucking have to stop myself from saying it, because it's, do you know what I mean?
Tone down your language a bit, didn't you?
Yeah, I haven't spoke bootneck slang for a while either.
No, like that's another weird one. Is like there's a few things that I've went to say in this podcast and then I've stopped because like obviously it's the podcast. A lot of people don't a lot of people don't listen. But no, like a lot of the listeners won't know what some of the slang is. But whenever I'm chatting to another bootneck, like it just starts sort of leaking out of my mouth. But yeah, it's weird, isn't it? Like people when they get to the ripe old age of almost 34, like you are, most people are pretty settled, aren't they? You know, and it's sort of, it's very interesting. And like, I'm a bit more in the camp that you are, you know, me and my missus are waiting to go away as well. Just waiting on some operation stuff to get sorted. And then we're hopefully off. So it's like, I'm in that camp as well of like, you know, life's about experiences and living it. It's not about going to school, going to uni, getting a house, getting a bigger house, getting a car, getting a bigger car, getting a dog, getting a cat, getting a baby, getting a bigger baby. You know, that is not for me what I would want to do, and I'm not putting that down for anyone. When you say you're on the way back to the UK, is that a permanent move? Is that a for now move? Is that a we'll see how it goes move? Or are you still rolling that dice?
Yeah, it is a see how it goes. That's the rad weird thing. We're even looking at Spain and Portugal. Yeah, it's the world is our oyster, to be honest. Actually, Costa Rica is really good for us. My daughter's in a great school. She's learning Spanish, which was important to me, part of the reason why we came down here. Canada was a bit locked up, do you know what I mean? So coming down here, we've had freedom to walk the beach, go to the beach every day. That's about taking every day as it comes and living a bit of a like normal life down here. So we want to come back here. And just, it's actually a very good investment opportunity if anyone has money. I don't have money, but to buy a property in Costa Rica will be beneficial in the next couple of years. There's a lot of developments happening. And
you're just looking for cheap rent, mate. You're like, so that we can rent it off them.
I'll look after your house, yeah, don't worry. That's actually what I'm doing right now. We're in some Texas lady's house, three-story house with a pool outside, and it's like, we wouldn't be able to afford this sort of place. I mean, sometimes like, opportunities just present themselves, and the way I live, like, we can actually go with those opportunities. So if anything actually developed in the UK, we literally can go to Australia, we can go anywhere in the world. So, yeah, there's stress involved with that. There's a lot of stress, and the families are not really too happy, but at the end of the day, you just got to live life, innit? Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, I think that's it. Like there's stress in whatever life you lead, but you have chosen the stress of will this country let me in over commuting every day for 2 hours on a sweaty train. You know, that's what stress other people are dealing with. So
yeah.
Awesome, Sonny. Well, I think we have absolutely smashed that. I think there's so much more we could talk about and we could delve into. But most people, although you like hearing my accent, most people are probably fed up with it. Before I let you go, mate, quickly run down all of your ways that people can access you, social media, website wise, please.
So website is sixsite.co. My Instagram handle is @sixsite.co without the dot, and same as TikTok. Instagram's my main thing, that's what I'm always on. Also, if anyone out there is interested in the psychedelic assisted therapies, it's the Heroic Hearts Project UK has a website and Instagram, but also I have @DoTheRecon, and that's mine that I just put out studies and information and just a bit of lowdown on what it's about. If anyone ever wanted to get in contact with me to discuss that further, I'll just talk to them anyway, like over message or whatever. So,
amazing. Yeah. Thank you, mate. I'll make sure I put all of those links that you mentioned anyway. I'll make sure I put them in the description of wherever you're listening to this. I'm pretty sure everywhere it comes up now, so that is fine. And if it doesn't and you're listening to this, one of the three people, my mum, that do, drop me a message and I can tag you in it and get... I've got to stop saying that joke because I've used that same crap joke like every single episode recently.
It made me laugh. It's because I ain't listened to your other episodes.
No one else does, mate. No one else does.
I have, though. I swear I have.
All right, recently I've been using that joke, which doesn't actually make sense because they're actually doing surprisingly well. So there you go. Right. Thank you very much, Sonny. Really appreciate you coming on, mate. It's taught me a lot. I probably won't remember it because I've had so many blows to the head. But luckily we know each other, so I can just drop you more questions.
Cheers, mate. I appreciate it. And anything you ever need from me, I'm always happy to help as well. Cheers, man.
Thanks, mate. Thank you for listening. And cheers, guys. We'll speak to you all soon.
Thanks for listening to another episode of the GTC podcast. Remember, do something that makes you just a little bit better every single day. Don't forget to head over to our Instagram at GTC Podcast. Thanks again. Stay wavy.